here's a question for you. Is marriage overrated?
Why aren't people getting married anymore?
A new Pew Research poll found that 2 in 5 young adults think marriage is an outdated tradition.
Marriage rates are at their lowest right now.
Is marriage really even worth it?
More than half of marriages end in divorce.
If you get married, you have to be stuck with this person for the rest of your life, right? That's why you get married. So that's why it's declining. Why would you get married if you want to have just one partner when you can have multiple?
Marriage is stupid.
Welcome to the Married AF podcast. Marriage is stupid.
The girl's voice before him
drives you insane.
It just makes my skin crawl.
I know.
I don't know if it's her voice. Because I don't know what she looks like, so it can't be her face.
I'm sure she's lovely. She just has a misguided concept of what marriage truly is. But
she is stupid.
We're here to correct that. We are back again, Married AF Podcast, episode something or another of season 3. We're your hosts, Matthew and Monica Powers. And we are finally getting to the episode that I had planned for last week. But that all changed because you were lying about Wheel of Fortune too.
Yeah, so.
But that's okay. So everyone who has listened and everything, like, it's been kind of incredible this past week and just the number of people, the number of downloads. So we just want to say thank you for that. We never, ever expected that at all. So, you know, if you like it, continue to like it and listen and download and subscribe and find us on all the socials and all the fun stuff and all this and all that. And on YouTube, if you've watched any of the last two, you'll see again, we're in a third type of different setup, but I think I kind of like this one. This one seems to be the best, most comfortable, most natural feeling.
I'm telling you, Powers, when the basement is completely finished,
it's done. It's over. We got the spot.
This is no more.
Oh, I agree with you completely. Trust me. We're okay with that. So today's episode, we're talking about
2 more months and the basement's finished, right?
1 month. They start in less than a month.
Oh.
So we're close. Oh, we're so close.
Even better.
I know. We'll be right there. So the episode today we had planned for last week, and it's mostly talking about a huge thing that happened this summer while we were just taking time off. This was planned for quite a while for you to have the surgery this summer. So kind of explain what it is.
Well, it's a hysterectomy.
Yes, it is.
To take out your body parts that make babies?
Yes, they do. And that's part of it.
Right. But it's a laparoscopic hysterectomy. So they take everything but your ovaries.
They do. And, you know, when people, and we didn't tell a whole lot of people about this, but
we didn't really tell anybody, Matthew.
When people found out about the surgery, especially after you had surgery or going into the surgery, it's like, why in the world would you go through all that? Because it's a very in-depth and it's way more than
part organ removal. They take out your organs.
Well, it is. I guess just the recovery time and what to expect was not what I initially expected until
we didn't know what we were getting into.
No, we had no idea. So
we didn't know anybody or still don't necessarily know anybody that's had this surgery at our age.
No, not at all. And the thing was, people would ask, like, I mean, why would you do that? Like, why would you put yourself through that and have that type of surgery rather than just getting the old snippity snip, you know, snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap, you know, Powers. Why wouldn't you just go get snipped? It takes like a couple days, a weekend, and you're done, good to go. It's not near the recovery of that. But this went a whole lot deeper than just getting snipped and not having kids any longer.
Right. Well, we weren't going to do that anyways.
We were not going to do that. But the reason for this surgery went a whole lot deeper than just, I don't want to have kids anymore.
Right. Well, we were not going to have kids anymore anyways, but during the pregnancy of our first child, I found out that I had some cervical cancer issues.
Yes.
So 6 months, I think it was 6 months after I had Cash.
It was 6 months after you had Cash. No, it was 6 months after you had Cash.
I had to have surgery.
You did.
To remove all of the cancerous stuff. And they didn't think it was going to be anything further than that. It didn't spread. So it was just strictly to the cervix. So I had the surgery and never had any other issues.
No, the surgery was a huge success. You know, the
never
doctor
came back,
who did it said, hey, we got everything. It looks great. Everything's fine. You look good. No need to worry about this.
But when you are done having children, you need to have the hysterectomy, because when you have that, it tends to spread and spread fast. And that's something that I don't know the numbers for cervical cancer type of stuff. But that was also something we didn't necessarily tell everybody.
No, we did not. Not a lot of people know about that.
No, I mean, it's not. I mean, it's just for me, it was, I know cancer is a very scary word.
Yes.
And well, when we found out, we were, oh, okay. Well, what does this mean? What can we do? If it's just here, what do we need to do?
Rather than the world falling apart, which when that happens, I understand how the world can fall apart. There are a lot of scenarios where that's really valid. But we hit it more of a kind of a shock, because they found it in pregnancy, but never told us until the end. She's like, we are not going to tell you about this. It was going to do no good to let you know about this. We needed to get you through this pregnancy safely, both you and your son safely, which they did. But we hit it in a way, just like you said, of, okay, that's not ideal, but what can we do to fix it? Yeah. I mean, what are the next steps? And the surgery was that.
I don't even think I was not even scared.
No, I wasn't either.
Not even when they told us. And it wasn't until the follow-up after having him where, okay, we found this. This is what needs to happen. It's strictly here. Okay, fine. Sure. And this was a BC for us, before Christ.
It was. We were kind of in that transitional phase. We were
going to church. We were
testing the waters and trying to figure out what this whole Jesus thing is all about. We had somewhat known, but I guess to the point of really knowing Jesus and having a relationship with him and being able to have conversations. Yes, going to him first.
It was not our thing.
Before this, I was like, I know about Jesus. I know who he is. I know what the Gospels are all about. I get all that, but I just don't feel anything. And this was kind of that transitional phase of, wow, my eyes have been opened to a whole different world. I never expected this. I didn't understand this. I've been missing out this entire time.
Yes.
So this was during that transitional phase. But fast forward to this past summer, or really even leading up to that, that's the reason why it was the hysterectomy.
Yeah, I was supposed to have this in 2017.
2017, 2018, somewhere around there.
2017 is when I was actually going to have the surgery, which would have made me even younger.
Oh, yeah.
How old would I be then? I've lied about my age.
That was
so
6 years ago. You're about to be
40,
the big 4. I didn't know if you wanted to say that or not. So I was, you would have been 34 years old at this time.
Wow.
Yeah.
So really young.
Yeah.
For this surgery, yeah. Younger. So we couldn't afford to have it.
No.
In 2017, because we'd took in three girls. And I was like, I don't know what the downtime is. It's just
not in the cars right now.
I kept pushing it off and pushing it off. And honestly, to the point where I'd pushed it off so far, it was not even in my brain again.
You're right. It was kind of like, hey, this was supposed to be done. Just can't do it right now. And then it was just kind of out of sight, out of mind.
Mm-hmm. So I started having severe cramping during my monthly stuff. And it got to the point where I was like doubled over in pain. And
you had never experienced that before.
And I'm on birth control, like, religiously. So we are very fertile people. That's probably something we...
Extremely fertile people.
So, I mean, I was off the birth control pill with cash 3 days.
And bam!
They said it would take 6 months.
Yeah, it took 3 days.
3 days.
And then Elkie was...
And then Elkie's was 3 weeks.
Yeah. So we're fertile people.
We're very fertile. So I definitely religiously take the birth control pill, but something, I don't know. I don't think it had anything to do with cancer coming back, because that was never a thing. It hasn't. But at my last appointment, I told my doctor about that, and she goes, okay, it's definitely time to go ahead and follow through with this. So when I bring all the packets home and you're reading all of this stuff, you're, baby, This is a lot.
It was way more than I thought. And then I went to the doctor with you for the pre-op appointment. I was like, all right, listen.
Yes, Matthew. Let's go ahead and get that out there.
We will get that out there. But when you came home, you were telling me about it. And you were like, you know, it's 2.5 to 3 months, 10 weeks roughly of full-on recovery. And my thought was, holy smokes, that's a lot of recovery. How in-depth is, like, you're going to be down for 3 months, you're not going to be able to do this or that. So I had to go to find out. And whenever we were going to that appointment, I was like, listen. And even after the appointment, I was like, listen, you just want to go get snipped and we'll call it what it is and it'll be that. But the reason why was ultimately the pain you were experiencing, you know, the cancer previously being an issue.
It can come back and spread.
Exactly.
And that was the whole deal. Okay, we need you to have this surgery not because you have the cancer, but because you had it previously, it is likely that it skipped that area totally and goes straight to your ovaries. Yes. And so when you have ovarian cancer, it can just get a little worse.
Yeah. So this was hey, let's eliminate the possibility of that altogether.
So let's get all of your cervix, your uterus, your tubes, all of that will be removed.
Yes.
But so we're going to leave you with the ovaries.
We're going to leave you with the ovaries. So we went to the appointment because I was thinking, all right, 10 weeks and let's just be straight out with it. It was, doctor was very clear, like, hey, there's 10 weeks, no sex. You can't do anything. You need to stay away from each other.
Don't even look at
none her whatsoever. And I was thinking, okay, all right, well, that's a while.
That's so long. What's the problem?
That's not what we're thinking. When we told our real close friends about it, the reaction for most of them was, oh, poor Powers. 10 weeks.
Praying for you a lot this summer.
Yes, 10 weeks. But I went since I was, you know, wanted to find out one about that, because boy, that is a long time. But also, like, are you not going to be able to do anything for 10 weeks? But it was like, no, you know, after 2 weeks, you'll be able to do a lot. After 4 weeks, you'll be able to do most of what you would before. But she was very descriptive, like,
why you can't have sex.
Don't you dare even think about touching each other. Because she said, if you do, if she is not healed, she said, her insides are falling out. I was like, all right, that's it. That's all I needed to hear. Nothing else.
The amount of stitches. One stitch pops, they all pop, and literally there are all of her organs
right
on
there.
Top of you.
Yeah, I was like, okay, that's all I needed to know. I don't need to hear anything else.
She said, we cannot fix that.
So I was like, okay, done.
Matthew, actually, you said, you're saying 11 weeks. 11 weeks it is.
We're gonna be extra careful just to make sure, because the idea of that is horrifying. So we go through with the surgery. We have the surgery. We were both excited. You were extremely excited.
I was so excited because that was, one, no more periods. And two, I don't have to take a pill anymore. So I don't have the period or get pregnant. So Done. It was a win-win.
It was a huge win. And you were even like, it's hysterectomy day. It's hysterectomy day.
And
you were so
nurses,
excited about it.
The nurses, I thought, for me, it was like on Frozen. It's coronation day.
Exactly.
It's hysterectomy day. That was all. That I was just super, super excited. And the nurses, they loved it because they've never had anyone so excited to come in to have a hysterectomy.
So let's get to that, because we're in there. You get called back. We're in there with the nurses and they're, you know, making sure everything's ready to go. They're checking you, getting you prepped for
blood,
surgery.
Their blood pressure. And the main important piece that they make you do for this is a pregnancy test.
They do. So
obviously you can't have a hysterectomy if you're pregnant.
You cannot. So you're in the bed, you're getting prepared. They're checking your blood, getting your blood, they're doing blood pressure, they're getting your IV and everything ready. And this freaks me out. I hate every bit of this. So I'm just sitting off in the corner, just doing everything I can not to watch them jab needles and everything.
Because Matthew is terrified of blood.
I hate it. I hate the idea of it.
Can't look at it because he passes out. He's passed out on his own blood. Seeing his own blood.
Yeah, I'm just like Jason Segel and Forgetting Sarah Marshall, just little, then just done.
Dead.
So I'm just sitting over there, and you had already done what you needed to do for a pregnancy test, and they're talking everything, and one of the nurses, I'll let you tell the story, because we just both were like, what?
So one of the nurses has the pregnancy test, and she leans over to the other nurse who is doing my IV and shows her the test and says, have you ever seen one this faint? And me and you both look, I'm sorry, what did you say? And the nurse that saw or was asked the question, saw the strip and said, no. I said, I'm sorry. What is happening? Maybe we should just get her to do another one. I said, oh my God, I am 40 years old and going to have a child.
I immediately was like,
we joked about this the night before.
We did. Like, wouldn't that be crazy if you're pregnant and you can have that? And then immediately this nurse is saying, have you ever seen a pregnancy test this faint? And immediately it's like, no, this can't be happening. No, God, what kind of sick joke is this you're trying to pull off on us?
I said,
this can't be the case.
Give me another one. I will pee on it again. So the moment I did, it comes up straight negative. Hallelujah.
We're like, oh, goodness. Okay. All right. We can go now.
Yes. So everything was done and good, except for the anesthesiologist walks in and is concerned.
That's right.
And I'm extremely healthy. I don't really know what she's concerned with, because she says, is there any kind of medication that you might have taken to make your blood pressure be 140 over 90 something? I said,
which is very high for you.
I have really good blood pressure.
Yeah, 140 is extreme. That's like really, really, really high for you.
And I said, no, I didn't take anything. Wait a minute. You know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, they were checking my blood pressure right at the time one of the nurses asked the other nurse, have you ever seen a pregnancy test come up this faint?
Freaked us out. No wonder your blood pressure was through the roof at that time.
The anesthesiologist laughed, completely understood, and said, okay, we will take that again. Of course, comes back perfect.
Comes back good to go. So you are finally ready to go for surgery. You get wheeled back there. I'm like, all right, well, it's go time. I know the surgery's supposed to last about an hour and a half or something like that. So I'm going to go downstairs. I'm going to get tuna because St. Vincent's has the best tuna. It's so good. So I go downstairs. I get some tuna. I eat lunch. I come back up to the waiting room. I'm there maybe 15 minutes or so, and your doctor comes out, and I get called. I go into the room with her, and she just says, hey, everything's great. She looks great. She's done great. The surgery's perfect. Everything.
And you're by yourself, right?
I'm by myself. Yeah. Everything's perfect. We're good to go. You know, remember the recovery and this and this. We'll see you guys next week. But everything was perfect. Just want to let you know how great she's done. I'm like, great. She said they should. She's going into recovery. They should call you back up there about half an hour, maybe an hour at the max. I'm like, okay, that's understandable. That's okay. An hour goes by. I haven't heard anything. I'm like, all right, well, maybe it's just taking a little bit longer. 2 hours go by. Still haven't heard anything. 3 hours go by. Nothing. 4 hours go by. I'm beginning to worry at this point in time. I'm like, what in the world? Have they completely forgotten about us? I go up to the guy at the desk two times at about 2.5 hours. And then again, around 4 hours, I'm like, hey, can you just kind of give me an update? They're like, oh, she's still in recovery. And that's all I got. I was like, okay, what in the world is going on? It begins to worry me. About 4.5 hours later, I finally get the call up and I come up to the room and I have never seen you in so much pain ever. I mean, it was awful because you...
I don't remember any of this.
No, and you shouldn't remember any of this. I mean, you were in so much pain. You were crying and you're what we typically know as a freak of nature, meaning you recover from things so fast. You have an extremely high tolerance to pain. I've seen you break your nose, fix it, and get right back to what you're doing. I've seen you break your collarbone. No problem. I'm going to finish what I'm doing. I've seen you dislocate your shoulder, your herniated disc. I've seen it all. I've never seen anything like this before. It scared me to death how much pain you were in.
What did you do?
Just tried to help you.
Like you walked in the room and that was what I was doing?
You were there by yourself just crying about how much pain you were in at that point in time.
Okay.
And it was scary. And we were in there for about another hour and a half, 2 hours as you were trying to be okay. And we finally got you dressed, got you in the car, got you home. As soon as I got you home, the kids were here. They were taking care of you guys. I went and got all the medicines that they gave you for recovery. And we kind of expected maybe not this level of pain and how difficult this was for you, but we expected it for a couple of days for you to just kind of lay around, for you not to do anything. We expected some nausea from the anesthesia, all completely normal. What turned into 2 to 3 days, you went 2 weeks mm-hmm. where you were a shell of yourself. Like, you weren't yourself at all.
I don't remember the first week at all.
Well, there, and there's no, you know, looking.
In the second week, I don't.
Looking back now, I see that. So, you know, I had planned for a few days, maybe a week. You had a surgery the day after Memorial Day, I think it was.
It was like the first of.
It was right then.
End of May, first of June.
So I'd planned to just take off that week. I'll work from home that week. No problem. I'll be back the next week. But that wasn't the case at all, because you were able to do nothing whatsoever. You would sleep. You would come into the living room, lay on the couch, try to watch TV, try to sit up. You couldn't. You couldn't walk around. You needed to walk around. You needed to get around a little bit.
You told me to walk around the house.
Yeah, because of the gas from the anesthesia. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to get all that out. Or it was
what they did to blow up your insides so they can see whatever they need to pull out.
So, and it was just so difficult for you to be able to do that, which, you know, leads me to kind of go down the road of, you know, when you're married to somebody, to see them, one, in that much pain and to that, you know, much stress, and your body be stressed and you not be who you normally are. It's difficult for a spouse to see their spouse like that. For it to go on as long as it did was even more difficult. And to be the one who is taking care of you fully when you're not able to do anything for yourself whatsoever. And it takes a lot for someone to do that, and the love that someone has for someone to be able to do that no matter what. Now, yeah, it was way longer than I thought it was going to be.
Right. Well, I'm not the biggest carrier.
You are the worst patient on the planet.
I'm the worst patient. I was talking about being the caregiver.
Oh, you're not a caregiver at all. When I hurt my back, we learned that quickly. Like, oh my God, shut up.
You were going
to get up. You're fine. Go to the doctor. You know, put him in a home. That's essentially what it was like. But you're not the best.
You woke me up in the middle of the night to go pee because you couldn't.
I couldn't move. I couldn't get out of bed. That's a bad feeling.
Sorry.
But you're not the greatest patient either, because you are independent.
I am very.
You want to be able to do
stuff.
But
I feel like I should. I'm supposed to heal faster.
Yeah, and you didn't at all. It's not what we are used to.
No.
But, and yeah, you're a bad patient because.
And I don't complain. I mean, yeah, I'm like, oh, woke up with a crick in my neck or something. Oh, my hands hurt, my back hurts, something, things like that. But it's. I don't complain about.
No, you don't. Like, even after the surgery and the 2 week period where you were just completely unable to do anything on your own, you would try to, and you physically could not. You were unable to, but you would refuse to ask for help. And I had, you know, hey,
I don't like asking for help.
No, you don't. I was like, hey, you have to sit down. You have to lay down. You have to do this. You have to do that.
And I don't like being told what to do either.
No, you don't like being told what to do at all. And I had to do that, which made this even more difficult a lot of the time, which, you know, created even more friction. I'm like, oh my God, would she just listen to me? Let me take care of you. Because, yeah, it went 2 weeks and it was difficult and it was not easy, as it would be for anybody. But if it's 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 10 weeks, a year's worth, I would do it all over again. I'd do it every single day. And that's how we're supposed to feel for our spouses. But I think a lot of selfish people, you know, the 2 weeks that we had for, I think a lot of couples would have put some real strain and real stress on the relationship where they're even thinking, I don't want to do this.
I can't be with this person anymore.
I can't be with this person. They're not able to take care of themselves. They're not able to do this. And I think to people who do have these major surgeries or major health issues or any terminal illness, you see a lot of marriages end because of that. And to think that, man, the selfishness that is.
Death do us part. Sickness and health.
It's not what marriage is.
Those words don't mean anything anymore.
No, not like they should. Mm-mm. You know, we've talked before about, you know, marriage being a not a 50-50 split. And in this case, it was like.
I got zero.
It was 99.9% to 0.1%. And that's all you're.
And my 0.1% was just being there.
Yeah. You're just like a lifeless body, just kind of laying there, who needs to eat, who needs to drink, who needs to use the bathroom, who needs to sleep, and who needs to take their medicine.
I think the main thing I remember was I would have to lay on the couch, mm-hmm. and I have to prop up my feet.
You would, because the biggest problem that really came, the pain was unbearable. Mm-hmm. Your pain was crazy. But even more so than that was the extreme nausea you had.
That didn't go away.
For two full weeks. Like, you couldn't eat. You couldn't sit up. You couldn't do anything. You were just, you never got sick, but boy, were you extremely nauseous the entire time. For 2 weeks straight, you were extreme nausea.
Medicine didn't even work.
No. I mean, we got medicine to try and prevent, and it did nothing for you whatsoever. And that can be really, really tough on both individuals. But we have to take care of our spouses. This is what we're supposed to do.
Right. Well, think a year, 2 years prior to this was when I was in the car wreck. Left-handed. Everything that happened was on my left side. So I learned real quick how left-handed I really was.
No, it was big time.
I was so frustrated. I couldn't feel my arm. I couldn't lift it. I couldn't do anything. Therapy never made the feeling come back. It was just getting worse. It was like my arm was dead, essentially. You had to take care of me then.
I did. That was a cakewalk compared to the surgery, though.
But then a year, it was almost a year after the surgery, or a year after the wreck, I had to have my shoulder
surgery to be able to repair your shoulder. I had to have my
bicep reattached.
Yes, you did, which was pretty gross.
But you had to do all of the things in that. I mean, you literally washed my hair, dried my hair. You learned a lot about hair, and you didn't even have hair.
Despite not having any hair whatsoever, I learned a lot about hair.
Our daughter was so concerned. Why is daddy doing mommy's hair? Why is
dad? Yeah, dad because can't do this.
Daddy doesn't have hair.
it was so funny. But yeah, and that's, you know, I would do it all over again. Because I do love you so much.
Well,
and there's no one else I would rather care for than that. And that's how it's supposed to be.
It should be.
But we're so dead and selfish.
I mean, yes. And I feel like I need to explain why you irritated the crap out of me when you woke me up in the middle of the night to help you go pee.
Yes.
But think about it. I told you. How many days before you could not move?
Don't want to talk about it.
To go to the doctor. It's not about I'm right here. It's about I'm trying to help you and you didn't want to listen. I'll be fine.
It'll be okay.
Turns out he had a slipped disc.
And the doctor fixed me finally. But it was a rough couple days with that.
I seriously had considered to go get you crutches from that.
I did have crutches. I did walk around on crutches for a couple of days because I could, it was my leg. The pain was shooting down my leg and I couldn't do anything about it. It was awful.
He wouldn't do anything about it. That's where I was like, no,
like, would you
ain't going to help yourself. I'm not helping you either. Yeah, get up.
Shut up and do this.
So see, that's a different type of I'm done. I give up kind of situation. It is. And helping.
And at the end of the day, you did still help begrudgingly, but you did. But I guess you did kind of have a reason. Maybe just a little bit. So you spent 2 weeks in extreme pain, extreme misery. It was difficult. It was awful. But I would do it all over again.
I don't want to have to live that over again.
I know you don't. But that's the way it should be. Yes. We should you know, be longing for the opportunity to take care of our spouse. What an honor it is to get to take care of your spouse in that way.
It's a serving.
It is. It's an honor to get to serve your spouse in that way that they can't do anything for themselves. But guess what? They have you to be able to do that for them.
And like you said this morning, because you spoke this morning at church, we all the imperfect people need somebody to lean on.
We do.
And that's essentially what a marriage is. All I think of right now is Forrest Gump, Forrest and Bubba, when they were in the...
Forrest, I lean up against you. You just lean up against me. That way we ain't got to sleep with our heads in the mud.
I don't want to sleep with my head in the mud. So we lean on each other at different times.
We do. And sometimes we have to lean on each other a little bit more. But guess what? I'm gonna take all of it for you, and you'll take all of that for me whenever the time comes. Mm-hmm. That's what it's supposed to be. That's what marriage looks like. And it's an honor I get to do that with you.
Oh, thanks, handsome.
So finally, after the 2 weeks, we had a pivotal turning moment that it was just like, oh my gosh, we're finally going to get through this.
And but you were very concerned.
I was very concerned.
You were just, let's be honest, you were absolutely terrified.
Yes.
At this turn I of was. Events.
Like, so explain what that was.
Well, I slept for 30 hours straight.
You did. So I was.
You were scared that you sent in the kids to see if I was still breathing. You came and checked to see if I was still
constantly
breathing.
Constantly, because here, you had not been sleeping well at all. You had constantly felt nauseous, constantly felt bad, constantly in a ton of pain. Nothing was getting better. And I know you were, and we were just praying like crazy, like, God, can we see a finish line here? Can we just get past this point of pain? And we'll deal with the rest. And I remember it was a Thursday night. I was woken up in the middle of the night. You just felt awful. And it was, well, you were up, woke me up in the middle of the night.
I thought I was going to throw up, actually.
You
that
did.
Night.
You did. And that's what I woke up to. I was like, oh my gosh, this is never going to
end. I
was
in the bathroom for like half an hour, just straight up dry heaving. It's so gross.
Yeah, sorry, that's a little graphic, but it is what it is.
It's what woke you up, though.
It did. It woke me up.
You're scared.
Oh my gosh, we're never going to get through this. This is... we're never going to see the end. This is the way it's going to be forever and ever and ever.
Give her organs back.
Yes. Can we put these suckers back in? Doc Brown, where are you in the time machine? Because we can go back and warn and make sure this doesn't happen. We go back and get the snip snip. But I'm woken up in the middle of the night, and you finally come back to bed around 2 or 3 a.m. And from that point forward, you slept until you woke up for lunch on Friday. You ate lunch, about 30 minutes or so, you went back to bed. You woke up again for dinner, around dinner time, took medicine, ate a little bit, went back to bed. You did not wake up until that afternoon on Saturday. And you woke up, you walked out of the room, and it was like...
I walked out of the room. Now,
I didn't have to come get you or anything like that.
Every time I had to move, I literally had you or Cash help pick me up, sit me up to be able to move.
Yeah, we'd have to grab you
every single time.
Because you couldn't get up on your own.
I wasn't necessarily allowed to use any kind of stomach muscles.
No, definitely not. They just ripped your insides out of you. So yeah,
that, and we were only preparing for 2 holes mm-hmm. in my stomach, and there were 4.
There were.
So that didn't necessarily play out like we expected to either.
No, it didn't help the matter at
but
all.
But I got up by myself.
But and you're right, we had probably in every hour like, is she alive? Is she even breathing anymore? Because we hadn't seen you in 2 full days. And then that Saturday afternoon, you walk out of the room, you had a smile on your face, and I was like, there's my wife. There she is. She's back.
I see everyone. And the look on everyone's faces. Wait.
And it was immediate, like, oh, you need to go sit down. You need to go lay down. And you're like, no. You're like, I feel okay.
I mean, I had changed clothes.
You did. You had changed clothes. But you were like,
brush my hair.
I feel okay. You're like, I have no nausea. I have very minimal pain. It's more of a soreness than a pain. You're like, I feel okay, and I want to eat something. And from that point forward, there was never nausea again. The pain was very minimal. It was more soreness. But finally, after 2 weeks, it went well beyond what we ever expected. But you were finally back.
I was finally back. And then once I was finally back, another weird surgery happenstance.
Yeah,
happens.
So we didn't know this, but after you were back, about a week or so after, you begin losing your voice.
Yep.
Like, what in the world is going on? And as it turns out, because of the breathing tube they had to use because of
the
surgery.
It was the first time I'd ever had a breathing
tube. First time you ever had a breathing tube. Apparently, it did some damage to your vocal cords.
Yeah. How fun was that?
Why not?
Let's add on some more.
So
the fact that it happens to 0.01% of people who have surgery?
Of course it's going to happen.
Why not?
I mean, why not? So we went back to your doctor and she's like, yes, this can happen. I have never
had a patient ever
have seen this ever happen before. So we're going to
see another specialist.
So we go see another, you go see another specialist, and we won't talk about that necessarily, but essentially like, yeah, there could be some damage on one of the vocal cords. And you had to go on silence.
Vocal
silence.
For 1 week.
For one full week where you could not speak at all. You had this little board. You would write things down. You had another side of it where you would point to different phrases. You know, it was not quite, but may have been nearly more difficult than you being down for 2 weeks. Because you're not one who will not communicate with anything. I mean, if you have something to say, you're going to say it. You know, if you're asked a question, you're going to respond to it. So you're not one who's just going to sit there and not respond, not be able to have any type of input or whatsoever. And it drove you crazy.
Yes.
I mean, you would write furiously and point, and it was something.
I can't tell you how many Expo markers I went through.
A lot. You went through like an Expo marker a day at the very least.
I obviously had a lot to say and I couldn't get it all out.
But it was extremely difficult for, you know, you to be able to do that.
But wait, so that was starting week 3 when it was almost completely gone. It was a God thing that I started feeling better right away because we had camp, our youth group.
Yes.
Our students had camp, and I was one. Well, I'm a student leader at our church for students, but I also was a chaperone on this camp trip.
Yes.
As in 3 weeks out of surgery going to camp. And, you know, I didn't necessarily tell everybody. I told the necessary people.
The necessary people knew. The doctor knew. And she's like, nah, she's like, you'll be fine. Just don't get in the ocean, please.
No, pool.
The pool. That's right. The pool.
If I had to get in the ocean to save a child. Okay.
Yeah, that's it. So
interesting. So, I mean, the other adults on that trip had to find out because, hey, sorry, I will not be able to save your children.
Yeah, I'm just going to wave at them. Be like, hey, swim. Swim better.
Do better.
Do a little bit better.
So they had to know. But when they found out, it was just, you had surgery 3 weeks ago. And on week 4, we went to, I think it was week 4.
Maybe.
Whenever Francis's birthday party was.
Oh, no, that was like, closer. That was like week 8, week 9.
Okay.
It was much further down the line.
Okay, so that was like the first event we went to where there were
a lot family. Of people, a lot of family, yeah.
And a few, we went to
We went to like dinners and stuff like that. We went to a dinner whenever you went on vocal silence because it was very funny because both of my parents asked me at different times like how much you have to pay the doctor to put her on vocal silence. Ha 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 ha. Which it was very, very funny. Yes. And multiple people said, yeah, I bet this is great for you.
Isn't it? Your husband's loving this one. Actually, it's driving him crazy.
It is. I don't like not being able to talk to you.
Because we do talk a lot.
We talk like a whole lot.
You talk a lot.
Yes.
We might not like tell everybody your business until you wanted to get a podcast. But, you know.
It's neither here nor there.
Write a book, Powers.
No, yeah, we'll see one of these days.
So, anyways. But at the birthday party, someone had asked how I was doing. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm fine. They're like, are you okay? Like, somebody else had heard the conversation and said, I'm confused. Yeah, I'm fine. Why? Something wrong? They were concerned because they'd overheard the conversation and they wanted to know a little bit more. And I was like, fine. I had a hysterectomy, whatever, like six weeks ago. And they said, holy crap, you look incredible. Well, am I supposed to look bad? I didn't know anything. I didn't know how to respond to any of this. And they're like, I remember I knew somebody that had. Now, most of them, it was their mothers.
Right.
And their mothers were older than me in this situation where their mom had the, I mean, they were probably in their 50s when they had the hysterectomy. So I still don't really know anybody my age
that's had it. No, I don't either.
I mean, I know people that have said, oh, well, I know somebody that had this and they did better than blah, blah, blah. Well, I still don't know how to compare it or what to compare it to. But they were just in full-blown shock that I was up and moving around.
I know.
I don't know what to say.
Well, it's not expected because, you know, when if you know a hysterectomy, it rips your insides out, essentially. So, yeah, I mean, it's a big deal.
But, like, it's that was at 6 weeks or something, and I was thinking, you know, I went to band church camp for week three.
Yeah, so, yeah, you're again, that's part of your freak of nature. Once we got past the 2 weeks, it was like full steam ahead, ready to go.
Except it didn't have a voice. I sounded like Darth Vader for a very good bit. Now, if I do not have enough to drink still.
It's still, you still see
I start getting that. And I was supposed to go back for a vocal scan, but, you know, we're not going to talk about that.
No, that'll be another conversation for another day. So, but that was a major surgery this summer. You made it through, took good care of you.
You did. We
did the best that we could.
You did.
Take care of your spouses, people. They're there for you. Take care of them.
Marriage is not stupid.
Marriage isn't stupid.
And it's okay to have one person for the rest of your life.
Yeah, because those multiple people, they ain't taking care of you either.
Mm.
So let's wrap it up. God, we love you. We're so thankful for this opportunity and just this platform and everything that you're doing. God, we just pray that this will bless anyone who listens to it. You will get it to the ears that need to hear it. And just use this in any way that you see put. We love you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Play ball.